Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 234. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free, nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. A special thanks to our lead sponsor for 2016, Certified American Grown Flowers. The Certified American Grown program and label provide a guarantee for designers and consumers on the source of their flowers. Take pride in your flowers and buy with confidence. Ask for Certified American Grown Flowers. To learn more, visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org. And this week, I'm very excited to introduce our newest sponsor, Syndicate Sales, an American manufacturer of vases and accessories for the professional florist. Look for the American flag icon to find Syndicate's USA-made products and join the Syndicate Stars loyalty program at syndicatesales.com. Today's podcast guests conjured up the most amazing room installation at Lisa Wadd's Flower House last October. It was thoroughly mesmerizing and masterful in so many ways. And while I had a chance to meet and share time with Denise Fasanello and Anne Kilcullen during the days leading up to the Flower House opening on October 16th, we never had quite enough time to record an interview. However, when I was in New York City a few weeks ago, the three of us got together to record today's episode to share with you. Denise and Anne are the co-creators of A Floral Whirlwind, which occupied the upstairs dining room space at the Flower House. Sculpted of foliage, vines, and a few botanical surprises, this kinetic whoosh of a gravity-defying, tornado-like experience in the center of the room was pretty darn incredible for everyone who viewed it. Rather than trying to explain it myself, I'll let Anne and Denise tell you how they created this stunning work of art. But let me first introduce these two established New York-based floral designers and artists. The following statements are taken from the Flower House website and from each designer's own website. First, meet Denise Fasanello of Denise Fasanello Flowers. She wrote this, "Lisa's unbounded enthusiasm for this project sold me from the get-go. I'm planning to create a visual floral feast for the eyes. My favorite task as a florist is when everything is in its place and I can flit around tweaking and styling and making everything look perfect. Lately, I'm digging bold color choices, single flower groupings, and tiny, frilly little flowers." On her website, Denise says this, "I'm a city girl, born and bred. I thrive off the pulse and energy of this place, so my devotion to the natural world came as a revelation. It started years ago when I took a part-time job at a flower shop to make the rent. I'd studied fine art at the Cooper Union, and the play of color, scale, and form needed to arrange flowers felt completely familiar to me. I spent the next few years pursuing a career in the arts, all the while making art that incorporated flowers. In 2009, I decided it was time to reverse that equation and start making flowers as art. At that moment, Denise Fasanello Flowers was born. I looked to the world-class museums and cultural resources we have right here in New York City for inspiration. My fascination is where the trained eye of the artist and the unruly natural world meet. Art history, the decorative arts, fashion, textiles, and interior design, along with nature's bounty, are what feed my work. I believe a fresh, simple approach is usually best, yet I can't resist a bit of glamour now and then. Today, the business is based in the Brooklyn neighborhood of Columbia Waterfront. My team and I work all over the tri-state area and beyond, creating exuberant, natural-looking floral designs for weddings and special events. We also create floral installations for corporate clients, including Macy's, Chanel, L'Oreal, and Lancôme. Next, meet Anne Kilcullen of Blade Floral and Event Designs. Anne wrote this on the Flower House website. "I first heard of the Flower House project through Denise, a fellow designer here in New York, and it sounded amazing from the start. I love the idea of taking something old, abandoned, and neglected, and repurposing it. breathing new life into a forgotten place, combining my love of flowers with a project that could potentially renew some hope. It seemed like a no-brainer. Flowers bring joy at the most basic level, but sometimes I wish that my love of flowers and design could have a greater impact. Creating living art in this way seems like the perfect way to do just that. The ideas for my room in the flower house are still forming, and every day a bit of new inspiration comes to mind. I would love to see a lot of green. Maybe that seems obvious, but I want nothing too contrived. Instead, it should have a more natural line and free-flowing movement. My favorite task as a florist? Well, you can't count all the really glamorous parts of the business, like cleaning and processing flowers, loading buckets and boxes, sweeping, and all the other schlepping we all know and love. Most of all, I love the freedom that comes from designing. When a client gives you free rein to create, it allows your best to shine and inevitably results in the most beautiful work. Personal flowers for weddings often give me this feeling. Being able to be a small part of an enormous day for so many, having a bride's face light up when she sees her bouquet for the first time, is always a favorite part of the process for me. Here's more from Blade Floral and Event Design's website. After years of working in the New York City floral industry, Ann Kilcullen founded Blade Floral and Event Designs. Recognizing the importance of even the smallest detail, we view our client relationships as an opportunity for limitless creativity. Our goal is to bring the beauty of flowers together with the vision and personality of our clients to provide an experience that enhances their celebration. The natural beauty and art that surrounds our everyday experiences greatly influences our designs. Vibrant colors combined with intense textures are the foundation of many of our designs. We treat each occasion as a unique experience, and we know it is for our clients, listening to their ideas and transforming them into a custom design. A true passion for flowers and an appreciation for their natural beauty is what continually inspires all our work. Our philosophy is that the final design of each celebration perfectly mirrors our client's vision. We take pride in our ability to personalize every detail so that it reflects you and your story. I know you'll enjoy my conversation with Anne and Denise, including learning more about these floral artists and how they manage their studios. You'll see images of the famed Floral Whirlwind project from the Flower House, as well as the floral artistry of both women at DeborahPrinzing.com, where you can also find links to their social places. I'm delighted to introduce you to two friends from the Flower House. I'm here in New York City with Ann Kilcullen. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Why don't you say the name of your business?
Blade Floral and Event Designs.
It's so good to see you again.
You too.
And her cohort, Denise Fasanello. Hi, Denise.
Hi.
And your business is called?
Denise Fasanello Flowers.
Great. And we all met in Detroit when you were taking over one of the rooms of the Flower House. I loved your work so much. Did you have to leave early, or there was some reason we didn't get to record this when I was in Detroit?
I think we did. We were just in and out three days, four days.
We left before it was actually open to the public.
Yeah. Okay. We had events that weekend back in New York.
Of course.
So we came during the week.
Of course. So that was that one night when there was sort of a lovely little buffet up in that loft that Susan McCleary had, and that's where we met.
That's right.
And I wanted to, I've followed you a little bit and wanted to showcase the room that you designed, because I've been trying to work my way through the rooms. And when I was coming to New York, I thought, oh, this is a perfect opportunity to see you together. Your room was singular in that it was sort of the center heart of the upstairs. Yesterday, I interviewed David Beam and David Reed, and actually, they were right below you.
Yep.
They were in the center house downstairs. So it's ironic that the New Yorkers had to come in and be the heart of the Detroit Flower House. It just happens that you're based here. Your room, who wants to start and describe it? I mean, did you get into this first, Denise, and then bring Anne in?
I did. Okay. I've known Lisa through the internet for a while. She was a really, we connected early on when I was through my blog, and she's always been just a wonderful supporter of my business and me of hers. And so early on, she mentioned this to me when it was just a little bit of an idea.
Oh, wow.
And I said, I will be there wherever it is. I don't care, because I think it's an amazing idea. So I knew about this, and I sort of I would get emails and every once in a while sort of updating me on the progress. And I immediately thought of Anne, who I adore, and I said, we gotta do this. And we took the leap and we did it. And I'm not sure how we kind of came up with the idea for the flower whirlwind, but we had started a Pinterest share page.
Okay.
And we would just sort of send each other pictures of floral installations that we found inspiring and chatted about it. And I think you had sent a picture that had this like hanging Spanish moss.
Yes.
And
we knew we didn't want to just... We knew that a lot of people would be covering and having things grow out of walls.
Sure.
And
the surfaces.
Yeah.
Right.
So we wanted to do something different. And you definitely, Denise, I think, got us towards the... whirlwind, tornado, kind of east meets west type Midwest type
We definitely wanted to make a thing, an object.
A piece of sculpture.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's describe it, because I don't want to give it short shrift. It dimensionally, it's a singular tornado-like spiral coming wide at the top and narrow at the base in the center of the room, right?
Right.
How wide at the top would you say it is?
I think it was... Well, let me back up just for one quick second. We originally were going to have it kind of coming out of the window and sort of into the space.
Mm-hmm.
And when we arrived, and David was already downstairs and had perfectly cut a hole in the ceiling to attach the chandelier, and then had found, I think it was the door to the furnace or something.
Oh, right. Some fitting was in there.
Yeah. He had put it on there and kind of said, hope you don't mind. And it worked beautifully.
Yeah.
So... the top of the structure, I would say, is probably was at least 6 feet.
Yeah.
You know, bits maybe 7 feet in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And then it swirled down to 3 or 4 inches right into the center hole that he had created. So it was this art whirlwind.
We definitely thought about it in relationship to his room.
I didn't even know any of this, but it makes sense.
Yeah, because we were thinking it would kind of trail out the window or something, and then when we saw that hole, and we also realized it was a central room and that people would need to sort of cross through it to get to the rest of the house.
Seriously, I mean, there were the two front rooms you couldn't have gotten to if you guys had a lot of material on the floor, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So it looks like a tangle of vine and branches sort of suspended in midair. And how did you mechanically do it? Is there chicken wire in there? Or can you tell your secrets?
It was super easy. I can't even believe it stood up.
And now we're up on the ladder. We kind of just kept forming it and forming it and stapling it to the ceiling.
Which was
a challenge because of the old plaster in the house.
Oh, right.
And we were waiting patiently for what we had kind of anticipated would be our flower order. And, you know, amazing donations were coming through and getting grabbed up quickly. You know, it didn't go exactly as planned, which is always the case in our business. So,
You used all your skills anyway.
Kind of just redirected and Denise got outside. And I was trailing behind her and she was ripping and foraging.
I was like, we need to get going. And
we went to the backyard.
We went to the backyard and we pulled out all this grapevine.
Oh, you just were foraging?
Yeah, I foraged all the grapevine.
On the property. I love it.
It was behind the original house.
Because I think at the beginning, you know, Lisa had asked each designer to, you know, give a list of materials that they wanted, flower materials. And we were like, oh, we'll just use whatever's left over because we're making this big, you know.
It wasn't specific to a variety of
exactly.
Flower.
We didn't need a color or anything like that. And we wound up sort of saying, you know what, in the end, we looked at it, we thought about it, and we said, we don't want any color. You know, let's just go with green and browns.
Yes.
And we gave away what flowers we did have to other designers. And we took greens and things from others that they didn't want. And
we had the bittersweet.
Fabulous bittersweet.
And did someone bring that from Ohio?
Someone
or?
Had brought it, and then I think some just came from... I honestly don't remember who gave it.
Yeah, I don't know who did.
A big bundle came at one point, and we snatched it up.
Well, that's the kind of imperfect aspect of what you were doing, in that there wasn't a tidy little, like, band of flowers. It was just this textural... tapestry. It was woven. I mean, I come from fabric, so I think of it as very much
fabric.
Woven.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's see. That ceiling was what, about 7 or 9?
Yeah,
it was tall.
I thought it was pretty tall. I mean, it felt tall. 8 feet.
I think it was at least 8 feet.
So you were up on a ladder, or?
Yeah.
It was just fabulous. Well, we were talking before we turned on the recorder about this tornado whirlwind floral it's very kinetic. It has movement to it. So there's two things that my impressions I took from it, and I want to maybe just let's have you guys riff on this a little bit, because you probably do similar things in your own work, this kinetic movement feeling, but then also we were talking about the negative space. So what did that achieve in that room in terms of the mood that you saw people respond? Oh, you didn't even get to see people respond to it.
We just saw, you know, other designers and volunteers, and we did speak to some local press out there at that time. But yeah, we didn't really see someone walking the house and experiencing it that way.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the really only experience we had was, you know, people posting on Instagram, yes. I think was one place.
Yes.
And that was kind of amazing to see people walking through after we had left. I mean, I know that I spent at least the next 5 days kind of going back in the pictures and saying, Denise, this was awesome.
Because you photographed,
you photographed it yourself. You know, with your phone. And, but there was, and I have to give her a lot of credit, because the movement, like, she kept saying, come on, we got to do more. We have to bind these things in here. We have to keep winding and winding. So you had these almost like ribbon effects. So you could really see the way the structure twisted, because it really was twisting.
Yeah.
But also, she said, no, more, more, more. And
we were afraid that if we didn't do that, it would just feel like a big green funnel.
Right.
You know, and we didn't want a big triangle.
Well, it didn't have this perfection. It didn't have a complete symmetrical cone. Mm-hmm. It did have some torque to it.
And as we worked on it, it was very, very organic. Mm. And we really responded to what we had. So at one point, at one part of it, right, it would just be, you know, the Thai leaf kind of green feeling. And then at another point, it would sort of peter out and you would just see the bittersweet up on the top. So, you know, in the end, you know, when you're dealing with something that's in three dimensions, like flower arranging, you know, you're considering the whole, but you're also like looking at each part.
Mm-hmm. And because that's how people viewed it, probably.
Yeah.
They walked in, had their initial impression, like, oh my God, I can't believe this. There's a floral tornado in the middle of this room.
Right.
But then they got up close and maybe did explore those wider and narrower textures and surfaces.
Yeah, and color blocking, where some parts were more gray, green, other parts were more grass green.
Yeah.
And we should add, you know, we learned that it was in the room was originally a dining room.
Okay.
So we had a little bit of time and we ran out to, we asked Lisa, like a local Goodwill, and just bought a bunch of flatware cutlery. So at the base of it, it's kind of hard to see, but there's embedded like forks and knives and
oh my God,
you know,
that even
first we thought like, oh, we'll get plates, but you know, we didn't want it to be too cliche, but so we did sort of thread in some
utensils. Remember that. I'll have to come back and get photos, but that does hint at the fact that there's another dining room right below, and it's maybe that stuff's going through the floor.
Or we're pulling it up, you know.
That's wonderful. Well, I do have to tell you, we were talking before we turned on the recorder that Lisa Watt has just given a wonderful lecture in Seattle and to an incredibly attentive audience of floral designers and flower farmers and people in the wedding and event industry who just wanted to know, how did you guys do it? The second to last slide that she showed on her lecture was the slide of that really inspired her to do the flower house, of the fashion model standing in the Dior flower room looking up in awe at those flowers. And in fact, Lisa used the term to me, I want that the room hijacked that woman's emotions. The next image that she ended with was of a child of a friend of hers standing in front of your piece,
aww,
staring up with his mouth hanging open, and she's like, this is if I need to know whether this was a success or not, I just have to look at this photo.
Gosh,
it was amazing. Pretty powerful. Because, the response. So I just commend you guys.
Thank you.
It just, I suppose you're looking at vacant rooms all over your lives now thinking,
could we do this? We must bring it back to life somewhere else.
And I have to say, the one great thing about our space was, because it was not as intricate, and I'd say as everyone else's, we got a lot of time to go through everyone else's space and kind of really experience the rooms, because we knew we weren't going to be able to experience the house as a whole with the public. And that was pretty amazing.
You're right, because, you know, everybody did have a deadline to finish. And if you finished early, you got to experience and enjoy each other's work. The placement of the whirlwind in the middle of the room that then did allow you to have all this negative space around that, because there were a number of doors in entering and exiting that room. So the room itself served as a negative space for all the action on its perimeter. It just had this, you could breathe when you walked into that room.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, it allowed for like a moment of breath, I think, especially because we had the two open windows that were open and quite windy at some point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually,
kind of, how fitting is that, right?
We worked on it and we left the one haphazardly
That was Anne's idea. Door. That was fantastic. Because we did, we had just random doors in the room when we came in.
Oh, that's right.
Like, so we cleaned up, off the hinges, hanging off the hinges. We cleaned up the whole floor when we were done, and Anne said, let's prop this in a way that it is also part of the installation, like as if it just flew off when this amazing structure came.
Very Oz-like.
And very Oz-like.
Well, I have this impression of you two jumping in your car and driving out to Detroit from New York. Is that what you did, or did you fly?
Yeah, we jumped on a plane.
That's saner, especially if you had you finished on like Thursday night and then flew home Friday and had weddings that weekend?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And both our flights had been canceled.
Yes, our flights got canceled that morning, but it works out.
So that journey took, a total of 3 days or something like that?
Yeah, we got in Tuesday. And we left on Friday
morning. We started working right away Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, left Friday morning.
Did you bring tools with you, or...
We
brought gloves.
We brought
weapons
gloves.
You can't bring weapons on the plane,
we
right?
We knew that they would get taken. We just checked our, in-flight bags. Mm.
Okay, well, now everyone's heard a little bit about this wonderful piece that we've been oohing and aahing about, and I'm going to have, hopefully, Heather Saunders will let me use some of her photos to put on my show notes so people can see the good photos, because I took a lot of photos, too, and they're for personal enjoyment, but I'm not sure they're as great as Heather's. She really used the light.
Oh, yeah, she's phenomenal.
The way she took advantage of the light moving through that room, I think. But I want people to get to know a little bit about you and your own work. So, Denise, why don't you just describe your business, and then we'll jump over to Anne.
Sure.
And I think a lot of listeners are studio florists. And is that how you would describe yourself, or wedding and event florist, or...?
I would say the great majority of flower work that I do is weddings.
Okay.
I do some corporate stuff, and I would love to do some interior flowers. I get some of that work, but I would say it's mostly flowers. And I've been involved in flowers for many years, but I've been running my own business probably seven years. And I came to it, it's funny, I did not grow up in the country. I'm not, I'm totally a city girl. I didn't have a grandma's cutting garden, any of that. That's not my story.
That's refreshing.
Yeah.
not at all.
Didn't know anything about growing or the names of flowers at all. I'm an artist, and I went to art school, and I worked in the art world. I pursued my own career for a long time. I worked in galleries. I worked for other artists as their assistant. But there was this one opportunity in my 20s when I worked for a florist. I needed a job to pay the rent.
This was here in New York?
Here in New York. And I just had this feeling when I worked with it that it was just innate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just was like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I needed to learn all the techniques one needs to know and the names of flowers and et cetera and et cetera. But it felt very similar to making sculpture and doing all that. So I had always yearned to run my own business at some point and do my own thing. And it just evolved very naturally. I had a child and I couldn't continue to sort of do it all and do some events and work a full-time job. And, so it was just a matter of time before I said, okay, this is going to be it.
Wow.
Made a website, got the cards, kind of hung the shingle outside the door, metaphorically, and learned.
And so in that period of time, so your daughter's 9, so it's like in the last...
I started,
seven
she was
to nine
a toddler.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Did you... have enough of a network, or how did you get on the map?
I also was the age where friends were starting to get married, so I sort of did a lot of stuff for them, and I would slowly build a portfolio. But I did work for this floral designer. I took a little bit of time out to work for Jane Packer, the British floral designer. In New York, when she first moved her business, when she first opened in New York, and that was incredible, getting to know her a little bit.
Sure.
And we talked a lot about what is American floral design and mm-hmm. style, because Europeans, each country really has, to me, an identity.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned a lot there, and I just organically, you know, through having a blog and, you know, started meeting a community. But it really mm-hmm. hasn't been in the last, until recently, that I feel like I know people.
I know, we're all on a journey.
A long time.
So I just have to ask you, if you were talking with Jane Packer about the American style, how would you describe your style, and is it distinct? I mean, is it distinctly American, or does it have influences from Europe? Or
I think it definitely has influences from Europe, but I don't even know what America. I mean, I think so much of American style is. I mean, first of all, it's such a big country.
Yeah.
We were talking about this in terms of American grown, but you know, unfortunately, like FTD and the big chains have dominated what the consumer thinks design should look like, or mm-hmm. What they have being offered, and thankfully that's starting to change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think what I gravitated towards wedding work is because it was the most romantic, it's a chance where you can really do a natural, more organically inspired, lush design,
yeah.
which is where I gravitated
yeah.
towards.
Yeah, you're absolutely right,
yeah.
because it's such a high emotional event that
yeah.
there's a lot more willingness to do something romantic and not
yeah.
so, I don't know, like corporate-y.
Exactly.
Yeah.
yeah. But even though, to me, like, the best way to experience and enjoy flowers is, you know, very simply small on your bedside table, like something very intimate and close. So,
Right.
Yeah.
It can only be, that's all it needs to be, is a little bud vase with
yeah,
something
to really
fragrant.
Enjoy it.
Have you done work that has involved, and I'm going to ask Anne this too, has involved a large three-dimensional full-scale sculptural installation? I mean, at weddings probably have like arbors and
yeah,
huppas and stuff,
I mean, huppas
right?
and arbors, but I did do this totally crazy install for, I've worked for some fragrance companies,
mm-hmm.
so L'Oreal had hired me to do, in Macy's actually, this perfume, three sort of perfume bottles stacked on top of each other. It was for Flower Bomb, Victor and Rolf's perfume. And so that was fun. You know, that was an opportunity to just sort of, and that was all math, you know, like square.
Wow.
Yeah, I never thought math would really come back and bite me. But, you know, what's your square footage and how many flowers you need for that square inch, you know, and we just figured it out, and that's how we came up with the flower recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really powerful, and people loved it, and
I
it
bet.
Was a great spectacle. But
so now
yeah.
you're going to be like putting the whirlwind on your portfolio and hoping some wedding decides
the irony,
they want it.
The irony is that when I was really making art, I used to take artificial flowers and put them in a natural setting, photograph them. They were sort of, and I just, it's been so great to hear, to come sort of full circle and be able to use real flowers in an industrial, I mean, for not industrial, but in a,
yeah.
in a domestic setting
mm-hmm.
like the flower house. So
you're getting your karma points back.
I guess
you're,
so.
You know, for no more fake flowers
yeah.
for you, right? I
yeah.
love that. That's so great. And what about your blog? I didn't know you had a blog. I want to connect. I'll link to that on my show.
Yeah,
notes.
I mean, I had a blog. I carried through a blog for a very long time, and that was great progress on my work. And then, and now I sort of use it, now that Instagram's come along, it's such an easy way
mm-hmm.
to kind of update people on what you're working on. I see my blog as more of a place of inspiration.
Okay.
I put a lot of artwork up on there.
Oh, cool.
With
very
mixed
cool.
with flowers.
And it lives on your website.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So I would love to, in addition to showing photos of your work at the Flower House, have a little bit of a representation of the floral work that you both do, so people can get to know
sure.
you and start following you if they haven't met you already.
Great.
Good. I'm going to switch over to Anne and talk about Blade. And I think of you as Blade NYC because I think maybe that's your
yeah.
Instagram address,
yes.
right?
Yes, my website, yeah, and
okay.
everything else is Blade New York.
Did you start your own firm right out of the gate, or had you worked in other floral
no,
jobs too?
No, I've been working with flowers for 15 years.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
yeah.
I actually started right in about August of 2001 here in New York, so it was a little
wow.
interesting.
Intense.
Few, you know, beginning for me. I worked for two companies here in New York. I actually worked, did more of their events
mm-hmm.
at first because they both had event spaces that they rented out for
weddings and things. And then the first Valentine's Day rolled around and I kind of got roped into that part. Everybody did. And I have not looked back since. Wow. So I worked and managed those businesses for about 7 years collectively and then decided it was time to start my own. I had nothing to lose and everything to gain. And
when you kind of had the intensive work experience for someone else and you probably wanted to run your own business.
Yeah, and I think it's invaluable. We have a lot of conversations about that and how, you know, paying your dues and really learning how flowers react and, you know, all the different varieties and how to care for them and all of those, like, mechanics that I think, you know, sometimes get overlooked now. But so then,
and in a way that gives you more credibility because you have... you've had the experience.
Yeah. And I've always learned by watching and just observing. And then I just need to do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Then I want it. And then I, you know, it's kind of an immediate gratification. Like I need to do it right away. And so, but I, you know, I spent a lot of years doing that. And then I opened my own company in 2007.
Okay.
So I've been on my own for almost 8.5 years,
I guess. And when I use the term with Denise as well, like studio or wedding and events, how do you describe your business?
I would say it's mostly wedding and events.
Okay.
I do, again, you know, as Denise said, a lot of weddings. I do social events and I have, you know, a few private clients where I do flowers, not weekly in their homes, but, you know, on an as needed basis
for their personal,
their private events,
mm-hmm.
their dinner parties.
And you, we should talk about where you work. You're in New Jersey now, but you were in New York, right?
Yeah, I had always worked from the city. I personally moved to New Jersey about 2 years ago, so I decided to open up a production studio out there. Just
probably more affordable, right?
Yes, and it's just more convenient, mm-hmm. you know, for my life. But all my business is still mainly based in and around the city.
Okay.
But even, you know, clients who are based in the city, I mean, their weddings range from, you know, Hudson Valley to...
the Berkshires.
Oh, yeah, to all the way out east on Long Island. So it's, you know, it's pretty varied. So it almost doesn't really matter exactly where you're producing your events.
That's
because
interesting.
You're going to travel a lot.
So the percentage of weddings that you do in a year, how many are even just even in New York City? Probably just a small fraction.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say maybe half, you mm-hmm. know, half. And then the other half are kind of scattered throughout. So, you know, ironically, I've done a lot more in New Jersey, having no relation to the fact that I actually work from there.
But
now
there's probably some beautiful farms and vineyards,
mm-hmm. horse
and
farms, yeah. and things like that. Yeah. So,
huh? Yeah. And do you have employees, or are you kind of hiring up and down depending on the scale of the job?
Yes, I don't have any employees. I use freelance mm-hmm. Designers as I need them.
Are they hard to find, or?
No.
Or do you guys just have your own secret network of...
No, it's a pretty... we try to keep them secret, but they don't stay secret for long. Now, most of the freelancers, of course, you know, work among a lot of the different designers. And I actually welcome that because I always say that they have the experience to work with different people. They work with people who do huge, you know...
Mm-hmm. Ballroomy things.
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
you know, massive production type of events. And then they work with people who do smaller scale weddings that we work on, and it's nice because you learn from them, which I think is also, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of have to continue learning little tricks of the trade.
And they're kind of in their apprentice mode, and eventually they're going to open their own businesses and or
not. I find the really good ones that I love working with that's not their path. Not their intention,
yeah.
you know.
You can make really good money as a skilled freelancer.
Well,
yeah.
there's no stress of being a business owner.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Really good.
I'm thinking of the people that I work with, and most of them don't have their own thing,
mm-hmm.
and that's not really where they're headed, which I like,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, then they're there for you, and
mm-hmm. they
you
come
can
do
really
the job,
count
and,
on them,
yeah.
and I can count on them if I'm not able to be, you know, in two places at once.
So we're kind of here at the very beginning of February. Are you, Denise had made a joke about getting geared up for wedding season. Are you coming out of like a quiet winter break and gearing up, or what would be your typical schedule this week? Will you meet with brides and then...
Yeah, last week was filled with different appointments, a lot of proposals going out at this time of year from the inquiries that have come in, you know, from the beginning of January. As you know, so many people get engaged over the holidays. We had a busy fall, and then we had a pretty quiet lull between the end of December and mid-January, but I've already had one wedding this year.
You're kidding.
Last
wow.
weekend. So
what? During the snow?
No, that was the weekend before, thankfully. Yeah, but there were quite a few weddings that weekend.
I went out to the
I saw that. The New York Times did a story
yeah.
about those poor people in the snow. You didn't have a wedding, did you?
I did not. Thankfully, I was home toasting.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, okay. So that was the weekend we just had, you had a wedding.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
well, you must be exhausted.
Yeah. not really. you kind of get used to it. And then, yeah, and then we'll go into full swing in the springtime.
I think
it's concentrated more in the spring and then the fall for me. Yeah. Usually July is pretty quiet, mm-hmm. you know, but I say that every year, and then, you know, you get a spattering of things here and there, so.
Well, do you only want one wedding a weekend, or does life not always work out that way?
I mean, it doesn't always work out that way, and, you know, truthfully, we can do more than one in a day, so, mm-hmm. you know, we base it on the scale of the job.
Sure.
Right.
The distance, you know, but I've had weddings in two different places at the same weekend. And again, you rely on those people that you know and trust.
And you just kind of plan. If you come out of event planning, you know how to execute these things.
Yeah.
So for both of you, and we didn't say that Denise is based in Brooklyn,
right.
But I'm now saying it. We're sitting in a borrowed conference room of one of your wholesalers on the west side on 28th Street in Manhattan. So this is sort of the hub still for florists in your line of work. You're yes. having to come in here to mm-hmm. shop, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So how, like for both of you, how would your week go? Would you come here every day or at least once a week? Or
I think it sort of depends on the time of year. I know that, like, when the weddings are back to back and you're really in high season, you're here more during the mm-hmm. week. But, you know, I would say for a typical wedding on a Saturday, I try to order the bulk of what I think, you know, of what I need, you know, the week before, and then I'll come a few days before and kind of fill in and check. You're always kind of keeping accounts.
Doing your hand selection.
Yeah, hand selection.
You do like a once over in the market.
Yeah.
Then you go. And yeah. I've always said, I should do that. That's what, why I know.
How do you do it, Anne?
I kind of just, well, I've already done a sample usually, which I just come and I hand pick and I'm like, is this going to be here in a month? Yeah. Is this going to be here in a month? You know, like if I mm-hmm. don't know, because I was just saying to the guy who does the branches that I have like let all that information, like the seasonality of stuff, I've had to like let it out of my brain. Like there's just, I reached capacity yeah. when I had a kid and like
yeah when do magnolias bloom, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just like, oh, and he's like, I've been doing this for 50 years and I know I still don't remember. So I do that, I think, and then I look at the sample picture, you know, mm-hmm. 3 months later or whenever it is, and then I say like, okay, we need like this and this, and I base my recipe off of that. But I think sometimes you fine-tune it a little bit more and yeah. come and like do a preview, and then, I mean, that's what I feel like you've told me.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I meant by when the season's really kicking in mm-hmm. and the flower production is really fabulous and stuff. Like, I mean, you could be here on a Tuesday and see some great product from the local, you know, from a farm they're bringing in, and then like the next day it's gone. So, you know, I think the more comfortable I've become as a business owner, as a designer, the more experience that I've gained, the less sort of neurotic I've become mm-hmm. on being able to secure my product.
Yeah.
And you have to react a little bit. I say now on every contract, you know, that I can't guarantee any one flower variety, but of course the design would be, the general design is adhered to.
Mm-hmm. And the palette or something
like that.
The palette. Yeah.
I mean, every description is I use the word seasonal.
Yeah.
You know, as much as we can. But unless, you know, I mean, I guess there's an opportunity where an event is going to call for, like, all white orchids. And that's beautiful. And then you don't need to do that. But,
and they're not seasonal because they're greenhouse grown.
Right. You can get them yeah. all year round. But, like, in general, it's so great to be able to respond to the season, because not only are the flowers generally a little less expensive, but they just look their best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's kind of wrap up and talk about your sourcing philosophies. You got lured into the flower house, and that's where we met. And
yeah.
I think you figured out that that was sort of my passion, was promoting American flower farming. That's a lofty goal. If you, as I was admitting, you know, if you're not a designer and you're just an advocate like me, I can sit around and talk about that. But you guys are in the trenches trying to satisfy clients who are paying you know, money to make their event special. How challenging is it? And is it even a facet of what your clients are asking for? I mean, I'm just curious, where do you land in on that continuum?
I mean, it's something that I'm always aware of and, mm-hmm. you know, trying to kind of, you know, the best practices. I don't find that many of my clients, other than from a place of price,
mm-hmm.
are requesting seasonal.
Yeah.
The way I look at it is that they've read an article kind of on
yes.
Yes.
you will get your best prices if you ask for seasonal flowers.
They read it on some not blog or something. Yeah, and that's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, because I don't think it always is. It's not always true, feasible. You know, it just doesn't always work. But you know, I think Denise and I both, you know, particularly here in, you know, New York, when it's the season for locally grown things, J. Rose, you know, uses one particular farm that we absolutely love. I mean, we will eat it up and we'll use it in everything. And, you know, we know that that's available. At the other times of the year, we struggle a little bit with what we can use and what the client is looking for.
Well, we talked about this when we were downstairs. There was a lot of California greenery, eucalyptus and myrtle and that sort of thing. So there's probably a familiarity too of what, you know, what you could choose in the winter.
Right.
In terms of local flowers, like greenhouse product, is there's tulips coming from New Jersey, right?
So there are. Yeah, there's some ranunculus. You know, the question then is also, are you making choices for American grown? Are you making choices for the carbon footprint? Are you making choices for the labor practices? I mean, there's so many things to consider.
You have to kind of find your ethos and what works for you.
Yeah, and I think you try and consider all of that, but in the end, I mean, I'll just admit it, like, I'm just a magpie, like, the most beautiful thing. And the prettiest is what you're...
Yeah.
And that's what's just very exciting, that American-grown flowers, at least the products that we're starting to see in New York that are available to us, just look so wonderful. The dahlias.
Yeah.
You know, so...
There's a sort of, now more people want to grow that product and get it to the design, the high-end designer, and they see some glimmer of hope that that business is going to...
I hope so. Increase. I mean, I think that, you know, years ago, Anne and I have been involved in around the flower market for a long time. And, you know, there used to be a lot more businesses here, a lot more wholesale businesses, and they're sort of shrinking. And I think that when the market moved to South America, or big floral companies started ordering directly through the internet, these guys were
had a squeeze. Yeah.
You know, rents go up for them. You know, and then the frustration that they might have is, think about New York City. On any given Saturday night, how many parties are happening. The volume here is just tremendous.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah. And all kinds of flower styles, all kinds of florists, and all kinds of price points come to this market, or they're working in New York. So for the designer that really wants to use American-grown and seasonal stuff, and there's more of us, and there's a need for a lot of those numbers, I don't know yet if the farms... or supply can supply it with the same sort of consistency that a wholesaler can provide from another country.
Right.
And that's the difference that has to change.
No, that's the conversation I had yesterday with some of the Delaware Valley floral people, that they want to buy from farmers, but they can't always offer a floral designer a guaranteed quantity.
Exactly.
And I was explaining what we do at the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, which is this cooperative of farmers who own their own wholesale business.
If
you guys come to Seattle, I want you to see it. But our staff is, I say our because I've been on the board. Our staff is so attentive to this. They know, like, every Cafe Olé Dahlia has already been pre-purchased for summer.
Yeah.
But there are there's a blend of farms that are providing not just that color, but any hot color that's in that spectrum of dahlias, there might be, or peonies, it might be coming from more than one farm, but there's cooperation among
the
farms
great.
So that they're able to focus not on their own business, but on making that customer happy. And it's really refreshing.
That's phenomenal to hear.
Yeah. But it's a unique model. And I would love to see that happening elsewhere around the country, but it's going to take, you know, a lot of work to get there. And I see the ease of one wholesale business here on 28th Street being able to just put in those volume orders, you know, for a giant wedding that a small farm just couldn't do. It's a different kind of client who maybe is, like, back to what you said about the overall design, but not, you know, 600 white roses or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that also, like, there's a education all around, you know. People are much more, the customer is much more sensitive to the, you know, farm-to-table movement, especially here in New York as well. And, you know, many of the venues support that. So, you know, it's nice, hopefully, that the client understands that they're hiring you as a designer, that you're going to interpret it. You're not, like, you know... you're going to interpret the season, you're going to interpret their style, the style that you do, and it just sort of travels down the line.
Yeah,
from client, designer, wholesaler, grower.
Sure. So that I think that's a good prediction.
Yeah,
I want to see that happen too. Yeah. For the coming year, do either one of you have kind of inspiration or kind of predictions that you're seeing happen in your own business? Like, for an example, when we did the workshop in Seattle 2 weeks ago with Lisa, one of the designers who participated as a student who's got a very successful wedding and event business in Seattle, I said, "Ann, why are you here?" And I said, "You're at the top of your game." And she's like, "I don't, Deborah, every single job I have this year has something hanging. Because I have a wedding next week with the wedding cake is hanging." She's like, "I just want to learn how Lisa hangs things." Do you have sort of these waves of, I hate to use the word trend, but these things that you're seeing on the horizon that are influencing you, whether you like it or not, or things that you really do that you're trying to push your clients along on, be it palette or...
I don't know. I think that when I began, I was working for someone who, when they were doing the very, very tight monochromatic kind of look, we've kind of evolved, and there's been an evolution in the last, obviously, 10, 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, now we've gone very loose, very wild, very crazy. I mean, I almost just want to go back to just beautiful, like just a beautiful arrangement and like letting flowers have their natural movement back to kind of, our room being, having that sort of movement to it. And not feeling,
like the whole kitchen sink.
Not feeling too contrived and not feeling too...
Yeah.
There not be any symmetry, any reason, any, to the color palette, to the shape, to the, all of those, or the elements.
And the scale is out of control for some of these bridal bouquets.
It's just too much, in my opinion.
I
feel like I'm going to see a squirrel calling an animal. I just...
That's the new trend. Animals.
Animals. It is in there. It's a little too much, but you have to think about. I always say this: it's like you are responding to your client, the kind of client you're responding to, the season, and you're responding to the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And certain looks just don't work in big New York City ballrooms or
mm-hmm.
in certain, private clubs. I mean, I still am kind of a sucker for the Upper East Side trim
mm-hmm.
and proper look,
mm-hmm.
and. That's what's so fun about flowers is
mm-hmm.
that you can, there's a time and place for a wonderful loose barn style wedding, and there's a time and place for like a completely on point, New York City chic event, and they can all feel natural. They don't have to feel contrived.
Right.
And
appropriate for that.
And they could all be American Girl flowers.
Well, it's also great that where you guys are in the, you get an A+. Thank you, Denise. You are in this market where you can do both. And
yes.
It sounds like, Anne, that's been your experience too.
Yeah,
I didn't really ask you to describe your style.
I would say that generally speaking, it's a kind of a classic contemporary
mm-hmm.
design. Again, allowing the flowers to kind of, speak for themselves. I mean, at least that's what I enjoy doing
mm-hmm.
the most.
That's
and
neat.
A lot of texture.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use a lot of layers of texture, and everybody interprets that in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think some people could look at my work and not see the texture, but I like, and then the color combinations that I like to do. I still tend to be a little bit kind of tonal, monochromatic.
Mm-hmm. I love that look.
Without being
classic.
Too.
Okay.
Again, like that word contrived, I feel like it's a favorite of ours because it can feel like the things are kind of choking and
yes,
they're not letting, they're not
yeah.
breathing.
Yeah.
And I definitely designed that way. I started in the early 2000s, so that was what it was. And it's definitely evolved.
It's funny. I was doing an interview with a writer for, the Wall Street Journal a couple years ago, and she was trying to. She asked me, how can I get a representative photo of every decade of what floral design was?
Hmm.
And I said, I don't know, but personally, I would go back to every wedding magazine from the 70s, from the 80s, from the 90s. That's probably where you're going to get the sense of a floral style.
Mm-hmm.
I think she wanted a single flower, the calla lily represents the 80s, and that sort of thing, which, of course, if you thought hard enough, you probably could come up with that. But... We are thankfully people's tastes change. Mm-hmm. Because you'd be bored to death if you couldn't try something new or be inspired by a new flower.
Absolutely.
Or a new color. Mm-hmm. Although, I don't know. We'll end with this just because I want to know your opinion. The color of the year, baby blue and pale pink, Pantone colors. Right. How is that going to affect florists?
Yeah.
I think every year there's editorials done on these colors, but I don't think the...
Why are there two?
I don't know.
Just to get us to buy more things of those colors?
I've never seen that happen before.
The gender neutrality of it, both of them?
It could be.
I don't know.
It could be.
I would think that if baby blue and baby pink, I would make the pink more salmon, and I would make the blue more... like gray.
Mm-hmm. Like a eucalyptus gray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or maybe even a little green teal. Mm. The two together, I can't see.
It's funny. I have some friends in LA, some florist friends who did a flower inspiration board for their clients. I should send it to you.
Oh, yeah.
Just so they could explain it. Because people were calling them and saying, do we have to change our wedding colors? No, you don't. Well, it has been so delightful to be with both of you again. And just... Yeah. I feel like we're reliving our little moment in Detroit.
Absolutely.
I'm so delighted that people who listen to this podcast can meet you both, see your work, and hear a little bit about what got you involved in that crazy week in October, which seems too far away now. But
it was magical.
Yeah. I'm eager to see what you both do as jumping off points. Maybe there'll be a sculptural installation for some brave couple that is up for something out in the wild.
Be amazing.
Really good.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining me today as we peered into one of the beautiful rooms of the Flower House. I have an update about the Flower House to share with you this week. Heather Saunders, who served as the official Flower House photographer, has just announced her forthcoming book called Flower House Detroit. You can follow a link at deborahprinzing.com to pre-order the book and see a peek of the book's cover. And here's a bit more about the project. As the official Flower House photographer, Heather gained exclusive access to document the year-long preparation and exhibition. She has been a professional photographer for 19 years, committed to photographing real, meaningful, and powerful images, with a sense of humor and a genuine interest in the authentic spirit of faces, landscapes, objects, and of course, flowers. Her vibrant imagery has been described as thoughtful, cinematic, and timeless. She aims to live her life in a sea of these same adjectives. Heather's work has recently been highlighted in The Washington Post, Colossal, The Jealous Curator, My Modern Met, Frankie Magazine, Vogue Portugal, Flirty Fleurs Magazine, Huffington Post, and CNN. A traveling exhibition of some of her work, as well as speaking engagements on her experience documenting this life-changing project, will fill Heather's 2016-2017 calendar. You may see more of her work at Heather Saunders Photo, which is Heather Saunders, S-A-U-N-D-E-R-S, .photo, and follow hashtag FlowerHouseBook to follow her adventures as a first-time author. Also featured in this new book are words from collaborating designers, thoughts on the decision to use only American-grown plants and flowers, a walk through the surrounding neighborhood, comments on the experience from visitors, and a powerful section of acknowledgments to all those who made this incredible project possible. And there will be a beautiful foreword by project creator Lisa Watt. The Slow Flowers podcast has been downloaded more than 84,000 times by listeners like you. Thank you to each and every one of you for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. Until next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. If you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Wheatley and Hannah Holdgertz. Learn more about their work at shellandtree.com.